So much to get to in this hour, as per usual. Going to be talking fantasy football, and in most leagues, this would be the last week of the regular season before playoffs start. We'll be talking to Matt Letovsky at the bottom of the hour from the Sporting News to get your fantasy football advice and a chance to win a $20 gift card to the Ice House. And so much to talk to with our next guest, Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider. Not just the college football playoff, but also a big-time coach stepping aside. And I want to start there, Brad, before we get into the college football playoff in the postseason, is just Urban Meyer, this announcement, it didn't seem to take many off guard too much, because this was sort of speculated throughout the season, whether it was going to be this year or next year, that maybe the end was near at Ohio State for Urban Meyer. So when you did get the announcement yesterday, were you overly shocked that this was happening?
No. In fact, last week, you remember, they kind of, I don't know if it's leaked is the right word, but remember that story started making the rounds that there was a deal in place that Ryan Day was going to take over after the 2019 season.
Right.
And I'm not sure what the point of that was, but I remember being asked about it on Saturday, and I said, my question is, will he even make it to 2019 in Urban? Because, look, as much as that Michigan win might have energized him in the following days, I think it was really hard to ignore what we saw with our eyes, which was, you know, the toll that everything seemed to be taking on him physically. He just looked bad all year long, and you had to wonder whether he could even think about going through another year. And I think when he finally had time to kind of relax for a little bit and reflect on it, it was pretty obvious that he wasn't going to be able to do it for another year. And I made what I think is the smart decision for his health. Whatever you think of him personally, he did what he needed to do for his health. And so I'm glad for that reason that he made what I think is the right choice.
Yeah, and kind of along those lines, Brad, do you fall into the camp that you think this is truly it for Urban Meyer as a college football head coach, or do you think that there's pretty strong chance that, you know, after a couple years of hopefully getting his health worked out, we see him back on the sidelines again in the right situation?
Yeah, I think it really depends on what the nature of this health situation is. Now, obviously, whatever it was at Florida that required him to leave there for health reasons was something that after a few months, I think he felt like he had it back under control and could manage it, whatever. And that's why he got back into coaching a year later at Ohio State. And of course, you know, he's had another great run. Now, if this is something that they figure that they can kind of take care of medically and that it shouldn't resurface, then I would certainly expect that he'd be back on the sideline. But if this is something that's always going to linger and is going to be aggravated by stress, I don't see how he could get back into coaching at the level that he wants to coach at. Look, I mean, maybe you could take a job at a lower division and coach without all the same stress, but that doesn't seem like Urban Meyer to me. He's a guy who's, you know, motivated by winning at the highest level, and I don't know that he'd get the same enjoyment out of that. So I think it really depends on, you know, how serious and how long-term of a health issue it is.
In 5 years, Brad, what are we saying about Urban Meyer and his place as one of the greatest college football coaches? Do we, at that point, in your opinion, do we forget maybe a little bit more about how this season started off and some of the things that he's been linked to even at Florida? I mean, is that something that kind of goes away with time, and that we just kind of look at the performance and that just ridiculous success rate on the field?
I don't think so. I think that stuff will linger. Certainly you'll always be able to look at the record books and you see his amazing winning percentage. He's one of not too many people in the history of the game that has at least three national titles. Obviously, he's one of an even in smaller club that's won national titles at more than one school. But, you know, I think about Joe Paterno, and, you know, I realize that in a lot of ways, you know, what happened there with Jerry Sandusky is looked at as a much worse thing than what was going on at Ohio State. But that's something that I think is forever tied to Paterno. I mean, I can't hear Joe Paterno's name today and not think about Jerry Sandusky.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, no one's really putting Zach Smith in that category. But I think when you combine, you know, what happened there at Ohio State with all the issues that players at Florida had, and I mean, look, Aaron Hernandez was one of those guys, and so, you know, there are plenty of reasons to question some of the decisions that he made with players at Florida, you know, with at least one of his coaches at Ohio State. And I think that for as long as there are people, you know, still out there who covered Urban as a head coach, there will be people who just can't forget that part of it, in addition to just how outstanding he was as a football coach.
Talking to Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider. Well, Brad, we had the selection show this past Sunday. Do you feel like the committee got the four correct teams in the correct order into the college football playoff?
Correct is an interesting term. I kind of like the term correct better than best. Look, I think that one of the biggest problems the committee created for itself is using that word best, because I think most of us kind of define best or better as, you know, who would win the majority of the time if two teams played each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I have absolutely no reservation in, you know, believing that Georgia is one of the four best teams this year. I think they would, to me, would beat whether it's Oklahoma or Ohio State or even Notre Dame, who's all the way up at number three and undefeated, that Georgia would beat all three of those teams the majority of the time they played them. Certainly not every time, but the majority of the time. And so by that definition of better or best, I think they're one of the four best. Do they deserve to be in? I think you could certainly look at the LSU game and say, look, you got two losses, but one of them was bad. There's no excuse for Georgia losing by 20 at LSU, you know, losing by one score, maybe, but not by 20. And then even with that, to have had the opportunity in the SEC championship game up 14 in the second half. And I realize there are a whole lot of teams out there. In fact, maybe all of them, but Clemson, that might not be able to hold off Alabama, even if you gave them a 14-point lead in the second half. But still, they had their chance. They didn't seal the deal. And I'm fine with someone else getting a chance. I still believe, though, if you're truly saying you're getting the four best teams, then you failed. That's not what you got. But I don't think that's what people want. I don't think that's what the committee was set up to do. So they just need to get rid of that word best, find something else to call it. And I think they got the teams that most people wanted them to get.
Deserving? That really, is that the right way, deserving?
Yeah, that maybe, mm-hmm. Yeah, deserving, or, you know, just the ones that earned it with what they did on the field. And, you know, so I'm perfectly fine with the four that are in there.
Brad Edwards joining us, ESPN College Football Insider. Brad, I know another thing that, depending on how you look at it, and I'm really curious on your thoughts, Washington State, their AD, he said that he felt that the reason that Washington State will not be in a New Year's Six game is because there was a Pac-12 bias. Do you buy into that? Do you think what you saw from Washington State, that they legitimately have a gripe there?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a bias. I think the conference isn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. You know, that, I mean, so here's the way I look at it. Like, everyone wants to focus on non-conference schedules whenever they kind of dissect teams, you know, within this playoff era. And I don't think that the non-conference necessarily needs to be separated from the conference. I think it's the entire body of work. Just what's your overall schedule look like? And if your conference happens to have a down year, then that's a bad time to play a weak non-conference schedule. And I don't think anybody could argue that the Pac-12 wasn't really down this year. And they were down last year. Washington State picked a bad year to play nobody out of conference. And because of that, they have one win over a team that was ranked by the committee at the end of the season, and that was Utah. And look, I mean, you can say that they should get benefit of doubt over a team like Florida with three losses. But Florida, even though they do have three losses, they, you know, beat a couple of teams that were ranked higher than Utah by the committee. Or actually, you know, Mississippi State, I think, was ranked one spot behind. But you know, but Florida has some wins that are better than what Washington State has. And Look, I would be perfectly fine with Washington State getting in. I certainly don't think Florida did anything special to deserve to get benefit of doubt. And you could say that maybe that's an SEC bias, but I don't think anyone is shortchanging the Pac-12 and not giving due credit to teams that were really good. I don't think that the teams in the Pac-12 are any better than where the committee ranked them.
Well, and Brad, you know, you put the Pac-12 into this conversation. You can probably throw the Big Ten actually into this conversation as well. The leagues that play nine conference games, they just seem to have a harder time getting into the college football playoff. Now, I know the Big 12 is the exception again this year, but, you know, is it? Do you feel like it's worth re-examining the way that they go about these things? I mean, you know, I know even today, Jim Delaney was talking about maybe kind of doing away with divisions and having just the two best teams in this league play for a conference championship. I mean, you feel like we're getting to the point where leagues do need to examine what needs to be done?
Well, I'll tell you what, it worked for the Big 12 this year.
Yep.
You know, having Oklahoma, Texas, because I think if Oklahoma had a little bit weaker opponent, like Ohio State had a little bit weaker opponent in the conference championship game than if they played the second best team, that probably made the difference. And so, yeah, I think there's something to it. Now, of course, if you look at it from the other perspective, which is the SEC, ACC, having only eight conference games and the fact that those two conferences have been in this thing every year, I can't attribute that to the eight conference games just because it's been Alabama and Clemson. It's been Alabama every year in the SEC. Well, Georgia got in last year with Alabama, but then it's been Clemson every year except the first one in the ACC. And I think if you're looking at Alabama and Clemson, I think it's kind of silly to make the argument that if they had had to play one more game against the middle of the pack team in their conference that they wouldn't have gotten there. I think those two teams in this particular span of years, I don't think it would have mattered whether you gave them a ninth or a tenth conference game. They were still going to get there. But if you look at it from the Big Ten angle, you look at Ohio State, you know, 2 years in a row barely missed out on the playoff. And in both of those years, they had a crucial loss, a crucial lopsided loss on the road to a team from the Big Ten West. Now, I can't tell you that that's the team they would have missed if there had only been eight conference games instead of nine. But we know that the ninth conference game, it's one more game against the other division. And whether that was Purdue this year or Iowa last year, that's the type of game. It's that one extra game against what, you know, on average is going to be a middle of the pack team in the conference. And every other year, it's going to be a game on the road. And that's what's done in Ohio State 2 years in a row. And so I think it's probably fair to say that at least one of those 2 years, they might have made the playoff if they didn't have that ninth conference game. And that same thing applies to the Big 12. It applies to maybe not the Big 12 because there aren't divisions, but the Pac-12. And so, yeah, I think it's a legitimate conversation to have if you're the Big 10 as to whether you should try it a different way, maybe not going to eight, but certainly just trying to ensure that you have as strong of an opponent as you possibly can for the conference championship.
Well, Brad, as you look at the two college football semifinals, probably safe to say that Clemson-Notre Dame gives us the better shot at being a competitive game than Oklahoma or Alabama. Do you think the Sooners can, you know, keep it sporty against the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, I think it is Clemson-Notre Dame, and I guess a lot of people would lean that direction because Notre Dame's undefeated. I still think that on the Clemson side, you have a true freshman quarterback, and while he's obviously very talented, you know, they have not played. Clemson has not played against good defenses this year, and I would be interested to see what kind of problems Trevor Lawrence might have if his running game is shut down by a good defensive team. How much of that load is he going to be able to carry by himself? And so that's kind of what I'm not sure about. Like, is Notre Dame good enough defensively to be able to kind of take away that Clemson running game that's been so dominant this year? He obviously is capable of making a lot of big throws, but can he do it consistently enough, especially on that stage? It's not something you would ever assume that a true freshman can do, no matter how talented. So yeah, that's the one I look to. I mean, look, with the Alabama-Oklahoma game, there are two injuries right now that could be very, very key to this game, one on each side. The first one is Hollywood Brown for Oklahoma, their most dangerous receiver, where we still haven't heard official word as to whether he's going to be able to go. He was injured in the Big 12 championship game, didn't come back. Their offense will not be as good if he can't play, and that's going to make the game feel even more of a long shot for Oklahoma. But if he can go, but Tua is not 100% for Alabama, yeah, that's an equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, look, I know that Alabama's offense at full strength, you know, clicking on all cylinders, I've seen what's happened this year when they have played against defenses the caliber of Oklahoma. And what's happened is that they've scored about 60 points in three quarters, and then they sat out their starters in the fourth quarter. So I don't have any doubt in my mind Alabama could score 70 on Oklahoma if the first team offense is out there the whole time and Tua is healthy. So I think that's the big question. What everyone wants to see is how much can Oklahoma's offense do against Alabama's defense, but it really won't matter if Tua is healthy. So I think really that's the biggest story in this game, is that high ankle sprain that he has, and when will he be able to come back, and, you know, is he playing like he did for most of the season?
Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, also on Twitter at JBradEdwards. Appreciate it, Brad. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
You too, sir. All right, up next, we're going to stick with the college football theme here. Earlier in the week, we told you that Turner Gill, of course, former Husker and now former head coach at Liberty, had resigned his coaching post and announced his retirement so that he could be with his ailing wife. Today, he had a press conference where he talked a little bit about that decision, and it was very, very emotional stuff from Turner Gill. We'll play a clip of that for you next on AM 590.
ESPN Tomorrow.